December 12th, 1727. As I write this, the Lady of the Holy Heart looks down upon me. It is an extraordinary painting. There stands the Virgin in all her beauty, except that her heart is exposed to view, as though her breast has been gashed open. And piercing her heart are many arrows, each representing one of her great sorrows. But my picture is only a copy. The original stands in the convent of the Poor Clares in Bruges. And perhaps it is because of this picture I have a strange yearning to tell the story of those incidents that wrought my life into such an uncommon pattern, the effects of which will never leave me, even until the day I die.
Thus begins an account written over 100 years ago by a young lawyer, the ancestor of a dear friend of mine who lives nearby in Cranford. She handed me the manuscript, discovered by an enterprising butler on a rare foray into the attic of her house, knowing, as she said, that I like old things, and so it might be of interest. I spent the whole of yesterday evening lost in its pages, and I now pass on its contents to you. The story, the young lawyer tells, is indeed an extraordinary one, and best told in his own words as he wrote them down.
As is so often the case, the chain of events in which I became embroiled did not begin with my involvement, but was set in motion well before I was due to make my entrance. The story starts in the year 1711, in the West Riding of Yorkshire.
You shot nothing? What? Nothing, Gisborne?
By God, hold your tongue. There have been days you've had, poor sport.
Oh, aye, a couple of pheasants, 2 or 3 rabbits maybe, but nothing. I don't remember coming home completely empty-handed.
What's that on the track up ahead?
What? It's a dog. Small terrier affair. You're not going to try and pot that, are you?
Damn your eyes!
By God, you've hit him. Good shot, Gisborne.
Did you see the way he took it? Lifted him right off his feet.
Whoops. Looks like it had an owner.
You should have kept the dog out of me way.
What's she doing?
Good grief. Practically washing herself in its blood, looks like. Is she mad?
Watch it. She's coming towards us.
Hear me!
Hey! You're frightening the horses, begad.
Hear me, all ye spirits of the air. Hear me! I cry sorrow on this man.
Now, look. I'm sorry if I...
I live alone in this world. My only companion was this small creature that lies dead in my arms.
It's clear you're fond of it.
Hear me, ye saints. He killed the only creature that loved me. May his heart be pierced with many arrows, Holy Mother. Hear me!
Come, come. Here, take this crown to buy yourself another dog and leave off cursing. I care nothing for your threat.
Is that so? For this death, you shall live to see the creature you love best. I, a human creature, become a terror and a loathing to you. Hear me, O holy saints, who never fail them that have no other help. For this blood's sake!
Hey, look what you're doing.
Be off, witch, and take your curses with you.
Aye, but the curse remains.
She's... battered me coat. Look at it.
And your face. You've got dog's blood on your cheek. Here, wipe it off.
Blast her. Who the devil is she, anyway?
Beg your pardon, sir. That's the old witch from the forest.
She needs a ducking, whoever she is.
What's her name? Do you know it?
Fitzgerald. Bridget Fitzgerald.
Fitzgerald. Had she ever a daughter?
No idea, man.
Yes, she did. One Mistress Mary, who went abroad and has never been heard on since.
I could wish she had not cursed me. She, of all people, may have the power.
Ah, tush! Your fortunes are well enough established, aren't they? What could she do? Come, forget it. Come on, go.
My part in the story began some months later. At the time, I was in London, living and working with my uncle, who was an eminent lawyer, and who was priming me to be his successor in business.
Ah, there's your summons, Philip. Called away to higher matters than copywriting, no doubt.
I expect it's merely another letter to be taken down, dear fellow. But fear not, your time will come for such excitement.
Though little did I know that my time, the time when life was to change forever, irrevocably, was come upon me now.
Come in, Philip.
Sir.
Important business, Philip. A case has just come in. Yes, intriguing. I'd have taken it myself if I'd been 20 years younger, but it's going to involve a lot of travelling. So, I'd like you to pack your portmanteau and start for Kilmurry in Ireland this very afternoon.
Ireland?
Well, you can catch the post horse for Chester tonight. And if all goes well, you should be there in just over a week.
Well, but what's the...
Yes, now, come to the point. It would seem that some very valuable estates on the west coast of Ireland, belonging to the Fitzgerald family, have been left to... Yes, well, there's the rub. Who is the rightful heir? It's up to you to find him, my boy. And it'll take some legwork, I can tell you. Didn't exactly keep extensive records. Your best bet is to start your search in the town of Kilmurry itself, where the Fitzgeralds have their seat. But you can work it out for yourself. I've every confidence in you. Here, these are all the documents. You can study them on the way.
The ancient Fitzgerald family of the town of Kilmurry have the unusual tradition of passing the inheritance down the female side. Last known survivor, Hugh Fitzgerald, who lived... early in the century. And after him, the records peter out. I love nothing more than the hunt. The genealogical kind, that is. And I got wind of a lead soon after my arrival in Kilmurry. Having gained permission to study the old parish registers, I found, buried halfway through a huge dusty tome that looked as though it hadn't been opened in years... On the 14th of May, Hugh Fitzgerald to Bridget Shelley. Though it seems his married bliss had not lasted long, for while wandering amongst the gravestones outside in the churchyard, I came upon the family vault and the most recent inscription. 28th of September, 1702, Hugh Fitzgerald. A visit to the local inn later established that his widow, Bridget Fitzgerald, had subsequently moved away and was last heard of living near the village of Coldholm in the county of Yorkshire. It was one very bleak March evening that I finally found myself at the door of her small cottage. The undergrowth of the forest came up to its very walls, and the palings that had once surrounded it were broken and gone.
Third time lucky.
And, believing no one could possibly inhabit such a place, I was on the point of giving up when suddenly... I was confronted by a majestic figure who stood silently awaiting the explanation of my errand. In the dark shadow of the doorway, I could only guess that there were eyes in the deep caverns beneath her brow.
Your name is Bridget Fitzgerald, I believe.
It is.
I am a lawyer, and I have some information for you.
May I come in? I am unwilling to keep you standing.
You cannot tire me. Come in.
The cottage was bare enough. Its only ornament, a rudely executed picture of a small dog which hung on the wall.
Sit down.
Thank you.
Could I ascertain, was your husband Hugh Fitzgerald of Kilmurry in Ireland?
He was.
May I ask if you had any children by him?
I had a daughter, Mary. Oh, what of her? What of her?
I bring no news of your daughter. I'm sorry.
Oh, mother of us, give me comfort. Why do I still have this hope in my heart? She's gone. I know she's gone.
Forgive me, but do you have any proof that your daughter is dead?
Mary Fitzgerald is dead. No tongue ever told me, but I know it. I have yearned so to see her, and my heart's will is strong. I wonder often it has not drawn her out of the grave to come and stand before me and hear me tell how I loved her.
She would surely have known that.
Ah, no! We parted with bad blood between us. Oh! And I fear that I wished her voyage might not turn out well, only meaning, oh, blessed Virgin, you know I only meant that she should come home to her mother's arms. But my wishes are terrible. Their power goes beyond my thought.
But you do not know for a fact she is dead. Can you tell me? You said she went on a voyage.
We quarreled, and she said she wanted to leave home. And she found a situation with a grand lady abroad over in Holland. And she left. And I never heard of her more.
And though this was a severe blow to my hopes, to be met with such a vague lead in my quest for the heir to the Fitzgerald fortune, it was as though some strange power took possession of my will, and I found myself saying,
"Fear not. I will search for her. I will not spare myself. Trust me. I will learn all that money, or pains, or wit can discover."
Ah, may the good Lord hear you, and give you strength to fulfill your promise.
I say amen to that.
And I was on the point of rising, when my eye fell once again on the small portrait of the dog hanging on the wall.
That is Mignon, my daughter Mary's own dog. She left him with me when she went away. He was the last link I ever had with her.
And is he no longer with you?
He was shot by a stranger.
And she fell into a kind of trance. I left quietly, returning to my lodgings to ponder my next course of action. Bridget Fitzgerald was obviously a devout Christian, and it seemed possible that the village priest at that time might remember Mary's departure from her mother's home. Further inquiries led me to discover that the man I sought was one Father Bernard, who was now living in Bruges. I travelled there, but found he had departed on a pilgrimage the week before. Wearied, both in body and spirit, by my will-o'-the-wisp search, I fell ill, and somewhat reluctantly, after leaving a note of my inquiry for Father Bernard, I returned to England, to the good advice of my uncle.
Rest! That's what you need, my boy. Take yourself off to some pleasant place and forget business for a few weeks.
And he recommended
Harrogate,
with its invigorating air, as a suitable place to recover my good health. Each day I roamed the moors, and my body grew stronger, though my mind was like a feather blown before the wind, forever dipping and lurching on its endless quest. Nor did it help that Coldholme and Bridget Fitzgerald's cottage lay in the neighbouring valley, acting like a magnet upon my thoughts.
Coldholme, you say? Well, it would take me an hour or two to get there, but what's there to see in Coldholme? Apart from the witch the sailors there. And now, come along. And I suppose it's all day you've been out on those moors and not a hot morsel of food inside you the whole time.
Well, I've...
Now, if you were my son and a few years younger, I'd give you a sour whipping that I would.
Well, I'll indulge in one of your excellent dinners now, Mrs. Howard, and mind, it is an excellent one, seeing as the reputation of your inn depends upon it.
Oh, fear not, the dinner will be good. Though the company a little sparse as usual. The sickly season is not yet upon us, it would seem.
Though I have seen one group, a distinguished-looking woman and her companion, who always keeps her veil down.
Oh, yeah. Those will be the clerks, Mrs. and their daughter. They're lodging in a farmhouse on the outskirts. Keep themselves very much to themselves.
I had once or twice come upon them at a sudden turn in the path, and before she had had time to draw down her veil, I had caught a glimpse of the young lady's face. I am not sure if it was beautiful, though it wore a look of intense suffering, without hope of relief.
And what is the reason for their seclusion?
Oh, I don't know, I'm sure. Though I've heard tell for all she seems so quiet, the young lady plays strange pranks at times.
And, as it happened, one particularly wet day when I was out on my usual walk, I turned a corner and discovered the ladies stranded like two butterflies on the bank of the lane, which had become flooded in the downpour. I rescued them, and suffice it to say, this event was the beginning of an acquaintance between us. I soon became a regular visitor to the farmhouse where they lodged, until one evening when I was met outside by Mrs. Clark in some agitation.
We have thought, sir, at least I have, that you know very little of us, nor we of you, indeed. And I beg your pardon, sir, I mean no rudeness, but I must say straight out I think it would be better if you didn't come so often to see us.
Why ever not, dear madam? Well, forgive me, I have come to see that for some reason you are both very lonely and in some mysterious sorrow and distress. May I not help you?
No, sir. You had much better go away and forget us.
But my heart won't allow me to give up so easily. Oh. There, I have confided more than I meant. But it's true, I have the highest regard for Miss Lucy,
oh,
and I...
Oh, dear, this is what I feared. Then, if you won't go, we'll have to leave.
Madam, do you think I have no means of tracing where you go to or come from, or indeed what your whole story is? I do such work for a profession. I know your names.
You do not know our true names, sir.
Well, I may have conjectured as much. But I declare here and now that perhaps from the first time I saw her, I have wished to become Lucy's husband.
Oh, what can I do? Then stay. I'll tell you. Not all. You wouldn't believe it. But perhaps I can tell you enough to prevent your going on with this attachment. I am not Lucy's mother. She is long dead. Her father, oh dear.
Her father?
Believe me, he loved her well. But suddenly he turned against her. And now she has no other creature to keep constant to her but me. Oh, to think only 6 months ago, sir, she was the darling and pride of her father's house. But you see, there is a mystery in connection with her. And if you discovered it, you would loathe her and leave, never wishing to see her again like others have.
Well, until I know definitely what this mystery is, I will not desert her. And I implore you to tell me what it is.
I can't. I'm under a deep vow of secrecy. If you're to be told, it must be by her. I'll speak with her and tell her of this conversation. Come here at 10 tomorrow morning. If she agrees to tell you herself, then she'll meet you here.
Very well. What in heaven's name?
No, don't look through the window. I beg you. Leave us. Don't seek any more now. Go! I warn you. I don't think you can stand this knowledge you seek. But go now.
I will, madam. But I will return.
Needless to say, I spent a sleepless night, and early next morning, long before the appointed hour, was on the winding path over the common that led to the farmhouse where they lodged. Ha! Lucy!
I came to meet you. I couldn't sleep. I only want to say this. I shan't think less well of you if you two leave me when you know... But no, listen. I want to tell you about myself. My father is a man of great wealth. He was... is a soldier, and his duties lie abroad. This is his likeness. It's a very good one, and I now wear it close to my heart, always. But I grew up very happily with Mistress Clark as my companion. My mother died when I was very young, and when my father did come home, he would bring me all manner of rare and precious things. They are a sign of how much he thought of me during his absences. I realize that now. I can measure the depth of his lost love by such tokens.
A look of indescribable sorrow came upon her face as she looked once again at the portrait in the locket, a face remarkably like her own. And I wanted more than ever to take her in my arms and comfort her.
No, don't approach me. I grew up, I say, in great happiness. Until one day, about 6 months ago, my father came home to us. And he seemed so proud and so pleased with all I'd done. And one day his tongue seemed loosened with wine, and he told me how my mother had died in childbirth. And then he went on to say how he loved me better than any creature on earth, and how some day he hoped to take me to foreign places, for he could hardly bear these long absences from his only child. Then suddenly, he seemed to change.
Ha! What am I saying? You're not to believe what I've just said. There's many a thing I love better. My horse, my dog, I know not what.
And from that day on, it seemed to me as though he was afflicted in his mind, for he accused me of strange deeds.
You're a liar. Look. Look at all the tender plants down there, all the bulbs I brought back from Holland. Trampled, quite destroyed. How can you deny it, madam? How can you? Those are your footprints, madam.
And when I denied everything of which he accused me, he swore at me and said he'd seen me with his own eyes. But that was only the beginning of my sorrows. There were many occasions thereafter when he found cause to reproach me, though I swear I knew nothing of what he said.
You were there, madam. I saw you, though I blush to say it. Such familiarity with mere stable hands. A gentlewoman like you. It was the conduct of a whore. Dear God, the shame of it. Look at me. Look at me when I'm speaking to you. Oh! Get away! Lucy! It's not you, is it? Oh, dear heaven! It's the curse! God help me!
And he fell back from me and shielded his face as though in terrible dread of me and...
You're trembling. Sit down here on this log. May I get you some water?
No. No. I can see you don't believe me. You think this is all invention.
No, I don't. Not at all.
Oh, that I'm mad, that I must have suffered some delusion.
Or perhaps your father did. I'm sure it is not the first time in medical history that a person has been known to suffer visions.
No. You don't know. You don't know.
And as I looked at her, with the sunlight burnishing a halo round her head, at that instant, I saw a shift in her face.
It is there. It has come. Can you see it?
Yes.
Oh yes.
In that perfect morning light, as I looked at her face, I saw Lucy, but with a loathsome demon soul looking out of her grey eyes mocking me. My heart stood still within me, and then, as quickly as the vision had come, there was nothing. Except Lucy standing before me, deathly pale.
Will you take me home?
I took her by the hand and led her silently back. I could not enter the house. I needed solitude. I returned to the inn and found a letter awaiting me from Father Bernard, forwarded from Bruges, concerning matters I had not thought of for what seemed like years. I read it without interest.
You left a message concerning the whereabouts of Mary, daughter of Bridget Fitzgerald. I took the liberty of making inquiries on your behalf, and discovered that she was once an attendant upon the Countess d'Auvergne in Ghent, until they quarrelled over Mary's attachment to an English soldier of some rank. The consequence was that she left the Countess's service and went to live with the Englishman, who, I discovered, was a Mr. Gisborne of Skipford Hall in Yorkshire. The Countess was later saddened to hear of Mary's death while giving birth, although apparently the child survived and was doted upon by Gisborne. In later years, however, it is said he has declined due to an affliction of the mind.
I dropped the letter unfinished. The events of the morning eclipsed any joy I might have felt in a renewal of the hunt. I flung myself upon my bed and fell into an uneasy sleep, where phrases from the letter and past conversations mingled in the swirling confusion of my overheated brain.
An English soldier of some rank.
My father was a soldier, a man of great wealth.
A Mr. Gisborne of Skipford Hall.
His duties lie abroad.
I am not Lucy's mother.
My mother died when I was very young.
Was later saddened to hear of Mary's death.
Her mother is long dead.
There was a child upon whom Gisborne doted.
She was the darling and pride of her father's house.
Hardly bear his absences from his only child.
It seemed to me as though he was afflicted in his mind.
The curse!
He has declined, due to an affliction of the mind.
The curse!
The Englishman, I discovered, was a Mr. Gisborne of Skipford Hall.
The curse!
I awoke with a start, and a possible ending to my search, which my befuddled brain had suggested in the twilight of my half-waking dreams.
Gisborne.
I ran as fast as I could to the remote farmhouse where I had left Lucy that morning. Mistress Clark, will you tell me truthfully, Lucy's father, is his name Gisborne?
Oh, it is.
And her mother, can you tell me if she was Mary Fitzgerald?
Oh, that was her name. How is it, sir, that you have come by this knowledge?
I will tell you by and by. But I have to inform you and her of some very important news. I am a lawyer, as you know, and I have been searching. I have very good news. Miss Lucy has inherited... Well, she is a very wealthy lady.
And what is the wealth of the whole world to her, sir?
Of course. What do you know about this bewitchment?
Only what rumours tell. A while ago it said Mr. Gisborne somehow offended an old woman who turned out to be a witch. And she cursed him. And ever since then, good fortune has never blessed his family. And Lucy has been afflicted with... Well, you've seen for yourself.
And all because of the curse. Bridget Fitzgerald, I bring news of your daughter, Mary. Your daughter is dead.
I knew she was. Tell me.
Not yet. You had once a little dog, the dog whose picture is on the wall there.
I have told you of him.
You have told me he was shot by, I seem to remember you said, a stranger.
The man who killed that dog rues it to this day.
What do you mean?
I have told you this too. My wishes can be terrible. Their power goes beyond my thought.
Are you saying you bewitched this man?
I am. In return for the death of the last creature on earth that I loved, his best beloved stands accursed.
Oh, wretched woman. That best beloved standing accursed before men is your dead daughter's child.
Oh, no!
I stood aghast at my own work. She lay prostrate in her great agony, and the fear grew on me lest she should die in her strife of body and soul.
No!
God, help her in her suffering.
Lucy!
Take comfort. I followed you here. Mrs. Clark told me you had news of my illness.
Oh, God!
There, don't fret, lady. I'll bring you some water to drink. What is her name?
Who is asking? Who... Is it you, Mary? Have you come back, my Mary? Come back to me.
My name is not Mary, though my mother's name was.
Your mother was Mary? Your mother? Then I am your...
You are the cold home witch. I know you. Come. Let me thank you. It is you that called me for...
Oh, God!
Oh, dear God!
And as I watched, Bridget rose slowly to her feet, staring in horror at the apparition that had been Lucy, and then began to speak.
This is my doing. This is my grandchild. And the curse has come full circle and fallen on my own. But I cannot pray. The words stick in my throat. Your power is greater than mine. What am I to do? Yet, I defy you, and I will wrestle with you and draw you from her if it takes my last life strength to do it.
And she ran out through the door, while Lucy fainted clean away into my arms. After Bridget Fitzgerald's disappearance, Lucy returned to the safe guardianship of Mrs. Clark, while I, in fear of the demon presence who seemed to take such delight in tormenting those who loved her, returned home to London. My uncle, meanwhile, had obtained the necessary testimonials relating to Lucy's descent, and all the great Fitzgerald property was now hers. Though that all was as nothing. I wrote to Lucy, but we dared not see each other, and I sank deeper in spirit and took little joy in any pursuit, but became as a recluse. One gloomy November evening, a visitor came to the door inquiring after me and was shown into my room.
May I introduce myself? I'm Father Bernard. Some time ago, we were in correspondence over the whereabouts of a girl called Mary Fitzgerald.
Of course. Please, come and sit down.
I'm sent here with a message for you, sir. From one of my penitents in Bruges, one Bridget Fitzgerald.
Bridget? Why is she in Bruges?
Well, she came to find me. I'm her confessor of old, as you know. And it was to me that she fled after her encounter with... her grandchild, Lucy. It was only by chance, if there is such a thing, that I came upon her not many months ago in the street beneath the shrine of the Blessed Virgin. I did not recognize her at first. Though it was evident she was someone in hopeless trouble, and as such, it was my duty to stop and speak.
Can I help you, my daughter?
Father Bernard! Is it you?
It is. Why, Bridget?
Oh, Holy Mother. I know you'll never hearken to me again, but hear him. You know him of old, and that he does your bidding. Hear him. Father Bernard, pray for me. She and all the saints in heaven cannot hear my prayers. for the evil one carries them off, but she'll hear you. I beg you, pray for me.
Blessed Virgin. And I did, praying for one in sore distress of what nature I knew not. Bridget held me fast, gasping with eagerness at the sound of my words. Then I rose and was about to make the sign of the cross over her, when she shrank away like some terrified creature.
No, I'm guilty of deadly sin, and am not shriven.
Then arise, my daughter, and come with me, and I will hear your confession.
And I led her into the church of Saint-Jacques nearby. She knelt in one of the confessionals there, and I listened to her story, which you know. And now it is by acts of deepest love and purest self-devotion she hopes to loose the curse she has drawn down upon her own flesh and blood.
How exactly may she do this?
By burying her former self and joining the poor Clares, an order of the strictest kind. They dress only in coarse materials. They go barefoot and live on what the inhabitants of Bruges choose to bestow on them, sharing even these crumbs with the poor and helpless. They are utterly dead to everything but the alleviation of suffering. And so, it's not in the name of the witch, Bridget Fitzgerald, that I come to you now, but of the penitent and servant of all men, the poor Clare, Sister Magdalene. She has striven for many months in this manner, and wishes to know whether her penance has been acceptable in the eyes of God, and the curse has been lifted.
I have not seen Mistress Lucy for a long time, but from letters she has written, I know there has been no change, and she is still tormented.
Ah, then all hate cannot be quenched in Bridget's heart. All Christian forgiveness cannot have entered into her soul, or the demon would have lost its power.
And he rose, sadly, to go. I was even more restless and miserable after this, and at length I asked my uncle's leave to travel. He agreed, and I left, with no distinct plan in mind other than to get away from myself. A strange impulse led me to Bruges, in spite of the wars then raging in the Low Countries, and I made inquiry for Father Bernard, and met him, not far from the dim grey walls of the convent of Poor Clares.
You take a risk coming here at such a time. There's constant rioting in the city. It's not safe.
Have you met with Bridget? Or should I say Sister Magdalene since I last saw you?
No, though news will creep out, even from a convent of Poor Clares. Apparently she does more than all the other nuns put together. Yet, when last month they would fain have made her mother superior, she begged rather that they would place her below all the rest and make her the meanest servant of them all.
Then she strives still.
Aye. Do you know, curiously enough, Mr. Gisborne, Lucy's father, is serving in one of the Austrian regiments. He's garrisoned right here in Bruges.
The news disturbed me, and I began to feel that events were being fashioned around me, and that I had been brought here for a purpose. That night, Bruges was in open revolt against the Austrian masters. Fighting broke out close to the city port where I was staying. I took up arms with the rioters, whose cause I adopted, and we clashed in savage battle with the Austrians, numbers falling on both sides. I saw the wounded lie bleeding, then a cannon fired and a volley of smoke obscured the scene. As it began to clear, I saw grey-robed figures like ghosts moving silently among the bodies, tending them. Sometimes it was to give drink from cans which they carried slung at their sides.
Sometimes I saw a cross held above a dying man and rapid prayers being uttered. I saw all this as in a dream. But I knew that these grey figures, their bare feet all wet with blood, and their faces hidden by their veils, were the poor Clares, sent forth now because dire agony was abroad. Suddenly fighting was renewed, and I found myself swept along down a narrow street and into a large square, where I saw several rioters had got possession of guns, and the havoc created was at a more desperate pitch. The only way we could distinguish the enemy in the smoke and confusion was by the uniforms they wore, and whenever I saw a uniform, I lunged at it and fought with all my strength, until one time something made me look up into my enemy's face, and I saw the face I knew so well, from its likeness to a daughter, and a miniature in a tiny locket.
Gisborne!
Stand back! I'll finish him with this!
Suddenly, a deathly calm seemed to descend over the scene. As if time had slowed, I watched as a poor Clare flung herself between Gisborne and the man holding the gun. The gun fired. And as she fell, her hood slipped back from her face.
Bridget, is it you?
Her eyes registered recognition for a moment. But then focused on the air above her head, as she said,
"Is this enough, Holy Mother? I have lain down my life for him. I cursed him for the grief he caused me. But now I have saved him. Is this penance enough?"
And as I watched, her eyes glazing, her body growing limp, I saw a look of intense joy come upon her face. I looked up to see what she gazed at, but could see nothing. And when I looked back, she was dead. I was allowed inside the walls of the convent for her burial. And it was during that service that I saw for the first time the picture of Our Lady of the Holy Heart. As I gazed at it, my vision blurred, and for a moment the face of the Virgin disappeared, and I saw the features of Bridget Fitzgerald, her breast open, and her heart pierced with the arrows of sorrow. I felt myself especially blessed to have been vouchsafed such a vision. And now, each day when I rise and behold my lovely wife, Lucy, and our three blessed children, I look at the picture and give thanks to the Lady of Sorrows.
In The Poor Clare by Elizabeth Gaskell, Mrs. Gaskell was played by Elizabeth Spriggs, with Kim Wall as Philip, Janet Dale as Bridget, Catherine Hunt as Lucy, and William Simons as Bernard. Other parts were played by Christopher Scott, Mary Wimbush, Sandra Birkin, Martin Head, and Nick Akins. The Poor Clare was adapted by Sally Hedges and produced by Nigel Bryant.